August 6, 2021, it's the Watt from Pedro Show. Pedro Show, happy Friday. Started off with John Coltrane. He's 19 years old when he did this, people. He's still in the Navy. And he's playing alto, in fact, 1946. A tune called Swiss, Sweet Miss. Don't fuck it up, Watt. Then we had Taylor Savvy, The Passionate Few. And you might hear some laughter. You can tell I'm not man alone because of those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got your brother Taylor Savvy here from Berlin via Skype. Welcome aboard, Taylor.
Hey, thanks for having me so much.
Bonjour. look, we got to give thanks right away for Tello Andrea for making the connect.
Oh, yeah. Andrea Belfi, hammer-style drummer here from Italy, living in Berlin, right? And you guys did some touring together, right, all through Europe over the last years?
Well, I'll tell you the reason I know him is because Tello Stay, right? Stefano Pelia. He's the guy who put together a project 2008 called Il Sogno di Marinaio.
Right.
Right? Zeman's Troima or some shit. And I did some tours with him. I did a couple recordings. He's a beautiful musician and also a composer. And just an incredible cat. And there's another, we went on. The project's still going and stuff. But I'm going to record again with him. Tell Stay for a buddy we lost, a guy named Miles. He's killed in a truck wreck.
And sorry.
But, you know, yeah, when you lose a music brother, right, the best thing you can do maybe is, or maybe only thing you can do is maybe make music in their honor.
Nice, yeah.
It's a hard thing to deal with. He's too short, but that's the way it's fucked up. It's hard for me to understand. But I've had... the hardest lesson I've never gotten used to is losing people. But let's talk about your journey, Taylor.
Through
your journey through music. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Okay. I thought you'd never ask. God. Oh, it's, what would it be? Just, my brother is 4 years my senior. And so we grew up in Canada in a suburban house, and my brother and I just always were music fanatics somehow. I don't even know why. It's not so much coming from the family side of things, but we just totally fell into with other friends on our street who had record collections, and therefore we just started playing music together like pots and pans on the bed, him just slamming his hands down on the acoustic guitar.
That's your earliest memory, is doing pots and pans.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, and that ain't so weird. I got to tell you, if you watch the Different Drummer documentary, it's only a half hour long on YouTube.com with Elvin Jones. That's how he started.
Right.
He got money. Yeah, and his sister helped him with a loan and then his paper route, and he bought a real drum set, but he started on pots and pans.
Oh, so, and he kind of never stopped in a beautiful way.
Right. And it ended up, right, oxygen tanks on stage, right? That guy went down doing gigs.
Right. And was it his... Oh, my memory. His wife was
Keiko.
Keiko. And she set up the drums, but did she also set up the oxygen tent as
well?
Yeah,
all that stuff. And people were saying, yeah, she's the one forcing him to do the gigs, but I think it was him, you know, love of music. They lived in Nagasaki, yeah. So their first gigs when they come over here to tour would be, of course, Los Angeles, you know. The iron-on stickers on the jazz machine, of course, he didn't wear them, but the young guys in the band did. They're really stiff because of the first gigs. So this pad, I mean, Canada's kind of big, like bigger than the U.S. So what part?
In Toronto.
Okay. Oh, the big town. Yeah. Okay. So,
well, Burlington was a suburb of that. In
sure. I've been... driven around it, kind of.
Cause great, cool.
You know, I love playing in Canada. I love being allowed to work there and stuff. Let me, in fact, first foreign country I ever played.
That's funny.
Let me ask you.
Do a lot of Americans think of Canada as a foreign country?
Most U.S. Cool man, when I started touring outside the country and talking to other people, they had no fucking idea. One dude thought Holland was a town in Sweden.
Great.
Netherlands. Yeah, whatever, you know, challenge. Not everybody, but, and I think it's a little better than, you know, 40, 50 years ago, but I wish, you know, especially with Canadian actors, they're on our team. Captain Kirk is Canadian. Mike Fox.
Right.
Yeah. So look, True North, you got your own identity, your own land, it's okay. I learned about the Loyalist Parkway, all that stuff from Torn and Fort York. And all that shit. Got to play Fort York, right, where they blew up a bunch of soldiers. Because I found out the War 1812 was to try to steal. But anyway, let's get on your story about music. So this pad you grew up in Toronto, in Burlington, Toronto area. Did it have musical instruments?
Yeah, it was more like a great community of kids that had the desire to get bands together. Like you say, it's not. I don't think it's an unusual story, but the nice thing is that most of us still keep in touch. I mean, that's kind of the cool thing about, I don't know, like social media and those things, of that, like, when I have a question, for instance, of like, you know, what was that song I was playing with you know, my old pal when I was 12 years old? You know, it's the kind of cool thing that I can still get in touch with him and say, yo, Daly, like, what was that Grateful Dead song again we did? So a lot of us still kind of became musicians and are still kind of have a foot in the water.
Okay, so this ain't in your house. This is your group of friends.
That's right, exactly.
Okay, yeah. I'm curious about the house, though, because some people grow up in musical houses, some people don't. And it seems not to matter on the journey of the musician, you know?
Right. Yeah, in my house, there wasn't any music coming from my family's side. And my dad was really, his record collection, like he, as an immigrant, he came over in 56 from Hungary.
Year before
and
I was born.
That's right. So both of my parents are Hungarian initially.
Oh, you know what? There's an island I played in Budapest called Sziget Festival.
There's exactly. That's right.
And your name's got a sounds like that. Okay.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm a forever slow learner, but I am a student. I am trying to learn Taylor's drum. So thank you so much. So Canadian school system, I'm not so familiar with, but were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
Not even. I wasn't such a good student as such, and kind of later I joined kind of the jazz band when I was kind of getting more involved in playing bass. Bass is kind of my first and main.
Oh, how'd you get on the bass?
Yeah, good question. I really think it was one of those things that nobody else played bass.
And nobody else wanted to rock the bass, so you filled in the gap, right? Man, in the old days, that was so much the fucking case.
But the funny thing, though, is that, like, in a flip switch, it's like, because I always loved playing guitar as well, and like lots of other things that's just around, but bass is kind of the main thing. But I find it funny how a lot of guitarists, they just kind of can mistakenly assume that bass is so easy for a guitarist just to sit down and play. And I find that great.
Oh, because it's like a guitar with four strings.
Yeah, and it's almost like...
You know what? Why don't we, like, learn these guys that it's actually a drum with four strings? It ain't a guitar with four strings.
That's right. But I think it's funny. It's like old bass players, like, they, if you really know, rather, if you can relate to that instrument, then you also keep quiet about the secrets of the instrument, too.
Ah, yeah.
Which is such a bass thing, isn't it?
Like a Robert Johnson thing, right? You turn around when you play so they don't fucking steal your hand moves.
Exactly.
So tell me, look, I'm a little prejudiced towards this instrument. So what was your first one?
It was kind of like a Fender Precision copy.
Yeah, from a pawn shop or something.
So bad, yeah, and it was the kind of thing too that later when I got kind of, I don't know, my chops up on like electronics, like I'm still really really bad at fixing instruments and things. But there was a point when I was like, I was a little bit older, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna turn this first bass into a great bass. I'm gonna buy some parts. I'm gonna really soup it up in my dad's kitchen, and I completely destroyed the whole thing.
I did the same fucking thing. What kind of amp was your first amp?
It was a PV amp, but like, I don't know. Some people say PV are okay amplifiers. The one I had was just terrible.
Yeah, mine was terrible too. I had a 215 300 watt thing. But they were Econo. That was the good thing.
Right.
They call them what, Mississippi Marshals or something? Yeah, like anti-tone. Yeah, right. So, but you said something about in school. Did you play this bass guitar in school in the jazz band?
Kind of, yeah. As I got older and the jazz bands were happening.
So, did you take instruction?
No.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot of ways to get down the road, so I'm just curious.
Right.
You don't have to, you know, what's it called, autodidact? Were you autodidact?
A little, yeah. But I started, I had some teachers kind of early on. I guess I started taking lessons when I was like six. Like, it's absurd now that I'm kind of in the 50 zone of life. And I think back to these things, I think, my God, I was so young. I did some of these things, But the fact is, yeah, my first lessons when I was like kind of six, my brother was already playing guitar. He was a little older than me, and ended up first taking lessons on lap steel guitar
Lap steel.
Because,
whoa.
Yeah, because my parents were just really, they just wanted kind of to put the two kids, you know, we love music, so they thought, oh, let's just sign them up for the first guitar lessons we can. So they went down to the local school, and it just happened to be kind of a stockpile for lap steel instruments, like Hawaiian lap steel kind
sure,
of
sure, sure.
Pedal stuff, but just the six strings. And my folks, they were really so, you know, out of it. They're like, yeah, okay, we'll take the package. We'll buy one of these guitars and a little amp, and the kids will begin to have lessons. And my brother and I, on the first day, we were just scratching our heads like, what the hell is this instrument? Like, this has nothing to do with any other music that we've listened to.
Yeah, well, let me ask you about that. Like, what was the first record you bought with your own money?
It would have been, I guess, Kiss Alive or Kiss Love Gun, one of those.
Okay, and what was the first gig you went and saw?
And the first gig, it's a toss-up of two things, because I can't remember. They were both, I was 10 years old, and I found two ticket stubs, and one of them was for Rush, I think Moving Pictures Tour.
Okay.
And, I mean, as a Canadian, you can't avoid
that. Not just that, Taylor, I got to tell you, even if you're in a trio, nobody talks to you about Cream. They all, or Jimmy, they want to talk to you about Rush. And I got to meet a couple of them, and they're nice guys and great musicians. But, God, I went to two of their gigs and fell 30 years apart and conked at both. Not on purpose.
Wow.
And maybe it's no comment on their music. Maybe it's a comment on what. Okay.
Sure.
So, there's not a lot of slide guitar going on with either of those bands.
Exactly. And the other show that is maybe I saw one first and the other was a direct result of just having a music teacher who was really into jazz fusion. And I was studied with a long time with this dude, but I ended up going to see Jaco Pastorius with the Word of Mouth Big Band.
I remember that. Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm still so happy. It's such hilarious memories of that situation. But I think, yeah, the first one was either Rush or Jaco Pastorius. So
okay, like, so the music's pretty divorced. But you know what? Maybe your parents' plan was for you and your brother to make a band. Did you guys make a bedroom band or garage band or basement band?
Yeah, and that kind of quickly went into kind of playing at the Battle of the Bands with certain friends. So it was kind of a regular thing, but just learning cover songs and playing them with friends down the street, or just my brother and I in the house, or doing funny four-track recordings with other people around the corner. So it was very much, yeah, it was a kind of from early on, it was a constant factor of social life.
Like that's great. Look, you gave me something that you did with Peaches. I'm going to play that right now.
I see you sitting stuff in your face. Why don't you stuff me up? I see you sitting, stuffing your face. Why don't you stuff me up? I see you sitting, stuffing your face. Why don't you stuff me up? I see you sitting, stuffing your face. Why don't you stuff me up? Eat a cookie, eat a big dick every day. Why? Eat a cookie, eat a big clip every day, why? Eat a cookie, eat a big dick every day, why? Eat a cookie, eat a big clip every day, why? Every day, why? Eat a cookie, eat a big clip every day, why?
Thank you.
I still blow clams after 20 years, 3 months. People, that chunk of music started off with Taylor Savvy along with Peaches doing Stuff Me Up. That reminds me of Rolling Stone song, right? Start Me Up. Kind of.
Yeah, right.
Can't copyright a title, people, so don't get any ideas. Okay, Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask Volume 2, Part A1. Yes, Bronze Age UFO out of Balmar has a new installment, I guess. Maybe they're going to make a whole bunch of this fucking rubber mask Lagoon Monster. Maybe it's a metaphor for the sitch. I don't know. Orin Ambarchi and Tom Rechion after that with Remake. Orin was on the show last week, and he was a connect from Fratello Andrea, too. So there's another gotcha. A Skullcaster, Chris Collins, with, he likes these titles. Neo Stylopchia, Stylopiga, Rome Bifolia. Yeah, what the fuck? You look at books, find this shit. Anyway, it's beautiful music, and I love it. Nathaniel Mellers after that with Horrific Object. Victor Timofeev out of the Ukraine, brand new Shaka Mana. Digging that. Wharton Tears from Fun City. He had got to record in his studio in Manhattan with Bob Quine and Steve Shelley, Lee Ronaldo, Vigino Johanna Frieza. Everybody said, man, Bob Quine's going to rip your head off. He's mean. And he wasn't. He was very nice. So don't believe people until you have the nightmare experience, I guess. Level 700. Raw Violin Seed Oil Slick by Bombas Prendon. And finally, you gave me this. Jamie Liddell with When I Come Back Around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I didn't know the connect. Like I said, I'm learning the mind reading shit, but in the meantime, we're going to have to use words. Sorry, Taylor. The shortcoming. So, okay. Get back to the days of yore. Get old Shakespeare on your ass. And you and your brother are playing with different cats, Battles of the Bands. What about, you and your brother... You know, there's no culture for it. They don't happen. Me and D Boom, we were trying to copy songs off records. But I'm curious, did you guys try to write your own songs?
Kind of. In a way, when there was a reason to, then we would. So, and it wasn't an emotional reason ever. It was more like, oh, we can't learn this cool song, so we're just going to have to write something for these 4 minutes of the set.
Oh, okay. And by this time, you have moved off the slide guitar and onto bass guitar?
Exactly. My brother was playing like a 6-string guitar then, so.
Oh, wow.
All in that.
So you guys, mm-hmm. You're getting all trad. You're getting all traditional on us. Okay. Well, and the drummer, man, they just be like other buddies? Or did you have a consistent cat?
No. It was always just a revolving crew of people.
And since school, I mean, you said you were in the jazz band, but you weren't really studying that hard that way?
Yeah, I was studying hard. I mean, eventually, kind of after high school, went and studied in Montreal. I got my jazz bass degree for what that's worth. So I really
no, that's worth a lot, man. I mean, is John Patitucci from there, or is it Ontario? I think he's a Canadian guy.
Is he okay? I didn't even know that.
He's an incredible bass. He's way into John Coltrane too. One of those guys with 6 strings, another solar system from Watt, but still a lot of respect for him. So I don't shortchange Canadians. Nobody picks where the fuck they're born, and that's stupid shit anyway. But you went to school there. Did you ever get to see gigs at Foo Flow and Electric?
I lived in Montreal for that, but no, actually didn't. I never did.
Because that's where I used to play in the old days.
Oh, great.
And man, I have a lot of good memories. Right? A lot of great memories.
And it was one of the only places, right, for
right, it was. It was
punk bands to come by. And,
right.
Beautiful.
I think, what was his name? I can't remember the boss, but Mr. Clark. There was Margaret Thatcher in England, and we had Ron Regan, and there was some clown. I got to talk to Joey Shithead and Billy Bragg about those days. You know,
sweet.
Things get all revisionist and stuff. But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of places to play. But that was a great pad to play. And also I got to play Quebec City once, a place called Chouclat. Okay, while you were at college and learning your jazz bass, were you playing in bands on the side?
That's right, yeah, playing in bands on the side. But it was always kind of in what always kind of was what made the gigs exciting for me was kind of this double-edged thing about professional and amateur, or kind of intellectual, or just like dumbing it down, or how can I say it in a way?
Lowbrow, medium brow, highbrow.
Kind of, it's just kind of led to kind of an appreciation of all things outsider. That's what I kind of want to get to. Studied technique and, you know, understood and studied Coltrane for a while. And it's just a never-ending quest for, you know, how these sounds are made and organized and all that. A few years is not going to get me through much, really. But kind of like the leading thing has been this idea of music just being played everywhere and just the average person. And I just say that because one of the other early things I remember as a kid was just kind of after dinner, my mom kind of doing the dishes and singing songs, but her pitch was just terrible. And like, she would admit that too. But it was this kind of like early memories of what makes music important, and what led me to it initially was just the basic emotion involved in it and the intent behind it. And that's kind of always carried through. So as much as I kind of like, I can appreciate, I don't know, jazz and high level technical stuff, ultimately it's like as a listener and as a player, it's always, I just want to get to that place where it means something. And like that can't happen 100% of the time either. But kind of like this lesson of like, okay, what is all this for? Like that, after studying music for a while, it's like, okay, I kind of in a Buddhist way, it's like, you know, the more you study, the less you know, etc. So why, I don't know, why get stressed out about stuff when it's just kind of more like, I'm just searching just for an emotion in the music.
Sounds like, yeah, like with your ma, the knowing was in the doing.
Yeah, right.
And that was enough. So what you're saying to me makes a lot of fucking sense. I think it's really great, Dave. Really good. Really, and sometimes it takes a whole life to fucking learn that. So thank you so much for that. We're at the end of the first hour, August 6th, 2021 edition. Wat Pedro Show special guest, Taylor Savvy. Hold tight for hour two. August 6th, 2021. It's the second hour of the Wat Pedro. If I just sit was there. If I do think so myself, 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 if I do think so myself. If I do say so myself, if I do say so myself, if I Not for Pivo Show. Getting all semantic on each other here off air, people, a little bit. Started the second hour off with Taylor Savvy, Say So Myself. That's what started off. That was the fuse. Got a kicker ready to pop. Rice Quartz after that. This is Lucas Bella when he's in China. The two guys over there, and they did a collab. The Imperial Family Reigns Supreme Pizza title. Plasterman after that from Ithaca, New York. Frame. Brand new Proj Leaf Blower. Raquel from Galaxy. It's called Slice, this tune. And then Rhythm 55 Frisky Mossfoot Riskly Riga, which is Andre Vita, the Pink Book Trio. You got to enlighten us to this, please, Taylor.
As to the title, I have no idea. But
No. But the you know, the whole trip. Why'd you give me that piece of music? What's it about?
Because it's one of the kind of few, I have a long relationship with Andre Vita, who kind of cut his teeth playing with Anthony Braxton for years and years.
I met him in Berlin, sax man, right?
That's right. You guys hung out.
And I played maybe three, four albums worth of his stuff. He's recorded some very interesting stuff. I don't think he's been a guest on the, yeah, no, he was on the show even. So, and I played a lot. And it was only one night. There was a lot of whiskey. But interesting cat, and, you know, I know he's a creative cat, so listen to this, but I understand now. Pink Book Trio actually was the name of the one of his records.
That's right,
okay.
That's right.
So he's probably from your Berlin days. So we haven't got up to there. We're still in your Montreal days, so I got your chronology fucked up, so sorry. So what happens after Montreal and you realize that academia is not going to give you everything you need for music?
Well, it gave me a whole lot.
And oh, yeah, I'm not discounting it.
No, I hear you, but as far as, like, making, how to say it? Like, I moved back to Toronto after I finished studying in at McGill University, and I had, of course, grand visions of world domination. Of I had a band that was living in that bubble, you know, that school bubble that a lot of people, you know, live in, and they have a hard time breaking out of naturally because it's designed for a reason to get you to study.
I hear a lot of cats with that experience says, yeah, it's designed to make more teachers.
Yeah.
But maybe that's not a problem either because you need teachers. I mean,
of course, and I had some fantastic ones and great players there. Still,
and there's nothing like a great sensei, right? Fuck.
Yeah, exactly. But I took that back to Toronto, thinking, oh, because I had a kind of a 7-piece band that I was gigging with, doing charts for, and I've always been like a big lover of just arranging and how to arrange sounds in certain special ways, and so I was really loving like Henry Threadgill and a bunch of John Zorn.
Yeah.
Kind of in that 90s era, it was so
like
media. Yeah, and the media was even covering this stuff, which was like, I can't believe how long ago that was in terms of like, I just wish it was still happening that way. Anyway.
I know, humans go through trends and it's terrible.
Yeah.
Because music's music. Why should anything fucking go out of style?
Yeah, I mean, I it's strange. And growing up kind of like in jazz music, I always thought, and I still do that, if you're a musician, you should get better with age. If you're a creative person,
more experiences, then, right? Yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, why shouldn't I buy someone's record 30 years later? It's going to be 30 years better, right? You know, and often with a lot of jazzers, that is the case. It's like, what's the new album by Pharoah Sanders, right? It's like top of the charts.
How long did it take Tommy Flanagan to get that Giant Steps piano solo?
Right.
I think he said 13 years. You know,
yeah.
Trey had been pracking that probably for a couple of years, and he just hands him just some chords.
So good, yeah.
But I don't think he did out of Belige. I really think in the bubble, right?
Yeah.
But in another way, not. There's this interview, you know, I played with, he talking to a Dutchman, and he says, who's your favorite tenor sax? And he goes, all of them. You know, the guy's just starting out, right?
Yeah.
So, not to put him on a pedestal or anything, but he was pretty humble about a lot of stuff. So you're disappointed by that. That and me too. I thought there was a lot of creative stuff going down with that stuff. Absolutely.
Sure. And I kind of took that energy back to Toronto from that bubble of being a Montreal student, and I took it into Toronto and realized like there just wasn't enough room for jazz musicians there. Like there, it's a small town anyway. But I mean, Ed Bickert, Don Thompson. I mean, the list is so huge, and these musicians, you know, when I kind of moved back, like, they're still active. They still are getting the gigs. They're still amazing. They work for it. You know, there wasn't much room for new young kids with ideas about improv at that time.
It's all locked up, all closed.
It's all locked up. Like, on the other hand, Mike, you can always just do it in your bedroom.
That's right. That's right.
So it's not, I'm not saying it as a complaint or anything like that. But for me, I just found it hard to kind of meet the community with kind of dual respect all the way around.
Well, I was going to ask you about Montreal. Did you know about those salon, you know, the Spanish cultural thing with the Godspeed You Black Emperor people? And
yeah, I it kind of, that was a little after my time. But
yeah, right.
Yeah, you were at the ground zero for all that stuff?
When I'd come through, right? I live about 3,000 miles away. But Mauro, the bassman, I know. And Carla Bozlich, a friend of mine here, she did stuff for Constellation. I know there was a scene happening. You know, it's all about people. You're right. There comes like a critical moment when you get a critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of needs that. Otherwise, we're like parallel universe bedroom warriors. Right? Because we don't know. And we're all deluded.
Yeah, and almost like we need that sometimes to carry on with the tasks.
Right.
The willful denial of reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
All around me all the time.
Yeah, absolute. You gave me this stuff by a guy named Gordon Thomas.
Yeah, do you know Gordon? Or his,
no, his I don't. But I really like this, though. Rock and Rolling Dance. Let's play it.
Oh.
Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. You will love it, you will love it, rock and rolling dance. Ooh, rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. No more restless days, no sleepless nights. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. Yeah, rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. You will love it, you will love it, rock and rolling dance. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. No more restless days, no more sleepless nights. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. You will love it, you will love it, rock and rolling dance. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. No more sleepless days, no more restless nights. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance. Rock and rolling, rock and rolling, rock and rolling dance.
went down to the river full of his life. But the poison running in him straight down the pipe. Trying to start living, turn left and turn right. Through the mighty timber, right, he's on the line. Laundry drinking daylight is the sparkling wine. Incense from the pines. Don't you forget about the hazards of club life. And rode down to the river, love turns to light. Will it be forgiven, employed but on strike? When it comes to modern living, investigating fun, her head came undone. Rotties on the line. Laundry drinking daylight is the sparkling wine. Incense from the pines. Helps us forget about the hazards of club life. It's such a bummer when you're just getting started and you're feeling like you're way behind. Someone's son or someone's daughter hanging out in cut time.
For Pedro Show. Yeah. Rock and Rolling Dance. Gordon Thomas started that chunk of music off. Then it's four E's in a row. I don't know how to pronounce it. But they're from Italy. Salary Man. It's just like a term used in Japan. But that's what music's for. Spreading stuff. Born Shitsters. These are Gaiji immigrants. Fukuoka. Born Shitsters. Richard Gere. Of course, it's got to be about a hamster and ass. And I'm actually on the bass here, but it's a special Marcel Marceau mind mix. So, yeah, either scratch or sniff. That's the only way you're going to tell as well. The Hazards of Club Life. This is a demo from Dan Jones before he gave it to his Squids, Kansas. Yeah, a band called The Squids in Kansas City. Fucking Charlie Parker's from Kansas City. Lester Young. Great town for music. Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at, right? And then finally, Taylor Savvy, My Love for You is Petrified, which is a great fucking title. I love it. When do titles, when you write a song, do they come first or last?
Same time.
Okay, because I always have to go first, and everybody thinks that's weird. So, enlighten us to Gordon Thomas, please.
Gordon Thomas is another kind of a find that was totally... I was in Montreal at the time, and as the story goes, is that a friend of mine, Chili Gonzalez, I don't know if you guys know each other. He's a pianist from Toronto as well, but we did a lot of music together in Toronto when I was there with Peaches together, and Maki as well. But that's another whole thing. Gordon Thomas, his music was on a cassette that Gonzalez, a friend of his, brought back from New York. That apparently there was a guy that was renting a place in the same building, and at birthdays and special events, he would give out his personal albums to people. So he was a musician that just recorded vanity albums just to give out to friends, and they're really hard to describe this music. It's kind of like glorified demo music, New York demo music. So for ads and things like this.
And sort of like a self-published author.
That's right. So a real outsider style approach of things. In any case, it was a 60-minute pile of music that just kind of came onto my lap with no information. And as you know, that's the most exciting way to
hear. Absolutely.
So it kind of took years. So I would just be making copies for friends, just getting it out there. And musically, what it was like, it was Gordon singing, and the songs would be very few lyrics, and most of them are just about ladies. So a song about Cher would be kind of like, the lyrics might be like, Cher, you are the best, Cher, you spread joy, aren't you great, Cher? So just
pretty focused.
Very focused, yeah.
Are you aware of a cat from Houston called Jandek?
Oh, yeah.
Is it something like that?
It's something like that. Gordon didn't Jandek do like 40 or 50 albums?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I got to do 2 gigs with him. I got to meet the man.
No kidding.
Actually, he called himself the representative from Corwood Industries.
Cool.
He was very cool people, and he knew a lot about our scene and shit. He knew about the Germs and Wire and Pop Group and Minuteman. Yeah, he's a very interesting guy. He asked me to play like Jack Bruce at the gig. He only talked about the music like right before we go on stage. Why don't you do a Cream thing? I said, okay.
Oh, sweet.
But that's beautiful about it. So you kind of cultivated this, you finding out about it, you turning your friends onto it. He became, see, that's what music can do. It becomes a fabric to connect humans. In a non-fascist way.
Yeah, right. But in this way, though, one of the people that I passed on the cassette to, my friends Malcolm and Stacey, ended up doing a documentary about Gordon Thomas. So they were piqued about the whole story, and they thought, hey, how can we make this a cool story? Because it totally captivated them as well. So they went down to New York, and really, in short time, they actually found Gordon Thomas, who was still alive in his early 90s.
Wow.
In Brooklyn. And basically, like, after not too much effort, they put this movie together, but they kind of ended up at the end of Gordon's life kind of as his representatives, because nobody gave a damn about Gordon's music for so long.
Yeah.
And as I was saying, like, his singing was kind of off-kilter and kind of like, I don't know, dad at the barbecue style a little bit, but the musicians were always like top shelf jazz musicians living in New York who were friends of his. So it had this weird thing of like not being able to figure out like why was this music made? There was one theory that we came up with. Maybe he saved a record industry CEO's kid from drowning. That was the one for a while. It's like,
wow.
Okay, and maybe in return for that, he got tons of studio time. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it was even stranger.
Yeah. Right,
the fact that
right.
he put these songs together hoping that he would get some success from it. Lo and behold, in his early 90s, that these kids from Montreal end up doing a documentary about him, finding him and kind of helping manage his catalog in terms of getting gigs for him. But these were the first gigs that he ever had.
Even
doing these recordings when he was, I don't know, 30, late 30s.
So, you know, Fratello Andrea was into a trio that was doing the work of this cat, Moondog.
Exactly.
Kind of like that, a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And so Gordon Thomas was found, and he had a career resurrection in his early 90s. And he passed away just a few months shy of his 100th birthday.
Wow.
And I got the good fortune to actually go down to Montreal to be kind of directing one of his gigs, and then we went to the studio for a weekend. So I had this amazing life experience for sure of having this moment of like, this music dropped in my lap, like, okay, this is going to change your life. This is so great, this music right now. And then to lead to actually meeting the man and actually working with him, and we put a record out called Everything's Coming My Way, which was the name of the documentary done about him as well. He was really happy at the end of his life.
That's incredible. That's beautiful. And we're at the end of the second hour, August 6, 2021, edition of Wapito Show. Special guest, Taylor Savvy. Hold tight for hour three. August 6, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wapito Pedro Show.
Titties look hard and the food just gotta rise. So my hand will be where I'm putting my eyes. you want to, baby. Want to, baby. Wanna, wanna, wanna. Come to me, come to me. Come, come, come. Cause I want to, baby. Want you, baby. Wanna, wanna, wanna. Cause I love you, baby. Love you, baby. Love you, love you, love you. That's it, that's it. It's, it. Please stop, please stop. Stop, stop, stop. Breaking my heart, breaking my heart. Heart, heart, heart. Cause I love you, baby. Love you, baby. Love you, love you, love you.
Chuck Berry with his pants off. I saw Chuck Berry with his pants off. I saw Chuck Berry with his pants off. I saw Chuck Berry with his pants off.
Hard for me to say that because I never do. Yeah, I always abbreviate. And with Peaches, you know, people always saying that. I never really played for Iggy Pop. I played for Stooges. He always called it Stooges.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he had a lot of respect for those guys. He loved the Ashton Brothers. Loved Brother Steve McCary. And then he wanted to work with James Williamson again. I got to see. I was finally the youngest guy in the band. Then we had Carl 2000 with and Blumenlied Elite. And you know, yeah, it is a trip because without that band, we wouldn't even have had a movement. And here I got to help them out, man. I mean, incredible accident, lucky what. And Babes New York City with Come On Baby, medley. That you gave me here. This is Chuck Berry, Folk Songs of Canada, and Muchachos. And, yeah, you saw Chuck Berry with his pants off, right? Okay. That's an image.
Yeah, yeah. Does that mean something to you, that story?
Of course. Everybody knows about that shit. It's usually the other way around, though.
Yeah.
Right, if the lady... She's not digging it so much. Anyway, What happens after a Gordon and Thomas experience? Because you end up getting to Berlin somehow.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it was kind of what's the chronology? Yeah, kind of, I was living in Toronto for a while and playing with a lot of different projects. And then I put this thing together called Taylor Savvy, which was kind of late 90s. It was this kind of explosion that a bunch of us kind of in the music scene that for us anyway, like a lot of scenes, is just a few people involved. And usually the history stays that way.
I know, but it creates the critical mass I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, that's right.
So, as far as you're concerned, it's the hugest thing in the world. But you're right; it could be a little fucking splinter, nothing. Yeah.
Of course.
To the mob. But,
yeah, but there was it was kind of a interesting time that there was a group of us doing music, Peaches included, that was very much trying to just link electronic music together with rock music. And kind of using theatrical elements or basically anything we could to read the room and to get people on our side by doing kind of aggressive music, but fun music with playing with sexuality and all these stuff that is on a, I don't know, 20 something year old mind all the time. So anyway, we're doing that and found that, I don't know, I had a band, Taylor Savvy, together, and it was me and two other guys. And we would just kind of put together these songs, which were just kind of slogan songs. So it was kind of like the Chuck Berry or the Muchachos thing. It's just kind of one riff over and over. But we had kind of some elaborate, like, choreography worked out on stage to kind of piss take on Fashion Week things or whatever else. And sometimes they would start with us being completely naked on stage, and then by the end of the set, we would have full three-piece suits. You know, so it kind of go in reverse.
It sounds like it's a little performance oriented. I mean, there's a musical thing that, yeah.
It's true, and we had a gas playing lots of shows, but the crowds were really it wasn't the time yet, just to say it like that in Toronto, but over in Berlin, Peaches and Chili Gonzalez had kind of been over there just to do a few gigs here and there, and they kind of put the call up to me, and they said, "Yo, Savvy, like, it's off the hook here. We're in Berlin. The scene is great. There's all these musicians that we love. We're listening a lot." Do you remember the label called Digital Hardcore?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because that was a Berlin thing, like mid-90s. I guess Alec Empire was the leader, right. But there was all
the riot!
yeah. And we were just loving that stuff, playing it in our cars and little Toronto apartments. And it was a thrill to finally go over to Berlin and to meet all these people, all these musicians that were like way younger than us too, but just basically doing what we wanted to do, just like aggressive, very sexual, and get in people's faces and just bring an experience with it.
Provocative.
Of course. Why? I mean, there's a lot of us have that streak of like, why do something unless you're going to try to change somebody's life, you know? It's that important sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe the character of your persona was a little earnest.
Maybe. maybe. But that kind of led to a full exodus. A bunch of us took, Maki was another one of us that just like packed up, move over to Europe, and found an audience of like willing people to, I don't know, to play the full small rooms of people who were stage diving and like freaking out and loving it. So
yeah.
It wasn't much of a, and to be honest, like it was a time in my life too that was a good time to kind of, let's close down some things and start some new things over here in Europe. So I kind of started fresh, and in doing that, kind of how to do this? It's not. Kind of the name change happened around then too. So Dave Seghetti is the name that I grew up with. But I kind of, by the end of the 90s in Toronto, my friend Feist, Leslie Feist as well, is kind of a singer-songwriter. She's great. And she tipped me off. She said, "Hey man, you should be Taylor Savvy." I'm like, "Oh, that sounds good." Oh, we were all giving each other names at the time. It was very hip.
Oh, I know. The 70s in Hollywood was this. I didn't know anybody's fucking name. I still don't. Darby Crash, Pat Smear, Don Bowles, all that shit, Lorna Doom. Tony 19.
Okay. Love to meet all those people.
You gave me the stuff of Hula Hut and the Seven Seas. Let's listen.
Start to die there. They start dying, and they were dying all day Wednesday and all Wednesday night. You see them dropping here and dropping there. They die on their feet. They talk about their wives and their families and their children, mothers and fathers. They talked about practically everything. So I worked a little bit harder. I stamped and I slapped my hands and I did everything to try to survive so if nobody else would get my girl. I wore out my boots almost to the inner soles to get back home to my girl, the one I loved.
I wish for them, I wish for all the best of outcomes. Just like 1992. So clean. It makes the baby scream. This salary. Those things that
St. John's and the Bellaventure, and I never saw so many people in all my life.
Half of the team is gone. They're scared. people so start playing Coffee by the Sidewalk. Yeah, the kids. They were okay. Someone found them later down the night, and they quickly got a set of vans and vehicles to get them home. A lot of people showed up, and they just stood there with the cars, and they carried all the gear for them, and people were carrying the sticks, and some people started playing hockey by the sidewalk.
The telecast was done in Montreal, France.
What else did you have lucky?
It was only natural that the Hot Stove League would play an important role in those early productions.
Play by play by Foster Hewitt.
He shoots, a shot right on.
They've set a record for the fifth time. They are the champs.
Tension riding high. Toronto Maple Leafs leading in the series, 3-2.
Canadians using six attackers. The net is empty. That's all we take the goal.
Thank you. for some.
First, sovereignty forever.
Je viens de voir, ce sera ça la question. Et il y aura oui ou non. Ça sera ça la question. Et il y aura oui ou non.
On vous demande de prendre.
Acceptez-vous que le Québec.
Sovereignty first, sovereignty forever.
Passeport canadien. Passe même le dé.
Dr. Pigro Show Last Music for this edition. Hula Hut, the Seven Seas with Kohala March. There's no romance in the cities no more. Only love could bring us back. Hockey team meets the ambulance. Snowbank versus landline. The Marshy Cho Dude Club. Mon Pays, l'Article. This is Manuel Armida's idea of a medley, okay? And this is a guy from Mexico City who lives up in Yellowknife. He married a Canadian lady, and he was on the show a couple months ago. Incredible cat. And Derek Montepetti, Unjust Intonation, Part 1. Lamont Young, maybe. Maybe not. He just likes the words. Taylor Savvy, finally. Fugue Hollers. It's like Hollers with West Virginia. You know which, where you live and shit? Is it that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly.
Mixed in with Johann Sebastian Bach. Okay. No, this shit about, like, I remember, you know, this is a guy when hardcore, like, in the 80s, and he got a label, and all his bands sound the same. And if you verified one bit from the whatever paradigm, all of a sudden you weren't doing punk, and you were doing art. And what the fuck's that shit about? I mean, this is for 35 years ago or something, right? Early 80s, maybe mid-later 80s. And they're trying to codify shit, you know, so they can sell it. And, like, this fits and this don't fit. And it's at the core thing of labeling off music and genre and all this fucking gulag Berlin Wall shit. I can't handle it. I don't mean to vent on you like that, Taylor. So what you're doing with your performances and your buddies and stuff and reinventing yourself for your own sake and the gig goers, you know, it was right. It's a two-way thing. I think that's fucking good enough. And it's very inspiring, you know. And when you look back on it, the revisionists are going to have their fucking say anyway, right?
That's right.
So
yeah, but go on.
Well, I'm wondering what you got going right now.
What I got going right now is, I mean, this last year and a half has just been a weird twilight zone for everyone. That said, I got lucky, and I'm doing a theater gig for the first time in my life, which is kind of cool. It's with the Berlin Schaubühne. With Thomas Ostermeyer directing this. Do you know the book called Vernon Zubutex? It's pretty great. I mean, the more or less, it's a story about kind of the generation of kind of people growing up when the music is just how record stores are closing down. The music industry is completely out of it. And the story is about an interesting dude that kind of starts with a record shop, and by the end of it, he's completely homeless. So it's a super, super nice production, and I'm playing in the band with that. So it's kind of like post-punk songs thrown in between the scenes.
So it's kind of a musical?
It's a musical, yeah. So it's kind of like there'll be a really intense scene, and then followed by, California Uber Alice.
I don't want to be totally, you know, derivative or shit, but Three Penny Opera, Bertolt Brecht kind of trip?
No, nothing like that. It's loud rock. It's loud.
Well, he was from a different time, so it's maybe like the Angry Inch, Hedgewick, or...
That's what you mean. Kind of, not... Yeah, it is. But I tell you something, it's great. Through the COVID, we were just kind of rehearsing semi-regularly. And I was the only person I knew that had kind of the access to a great stage, great lighting, killer sound team, just being able to play endless solos on tunes. I'm playing guitar and singing in this production.
Okay.
So it's good. Again, it's like something I've never done before, which is a thrill to jump into and do.
And you still sometimes play bass, though, right?
Oh, yeah. So that's kind of a constant thing, too. I'm always looking for improv situations, just basically new sounds.
Right.
And that element of, like, kind of this outsider thing of, like, it doesn't really matter what the source is. It's just there's certain human things that just attract other humans. So that's kind of always at the bottom of it. I'm always trying to, like, I don't know, rattle the damn same box to find, like, okay, how can I make a difference here somehow?
Shake up the deck. You know, Sly Stone said, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. He said a lot of good things, but that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, where can people find you on the internet?
They kind of can't. They can just kind of Google me.
You're going to have to go see this play, people.
Exactly. See the play. But I'm
and you're not. You don't have to just Google. You can use a search engine because they're not the only guys with a search engine. Ian exactly. MacKay really gets pissed off at that.
Sorry, Ian.
I'm not so weird. Yeah, sorry, Ian. Man, you know, it's been a big honor to have you on the fucking show, and we could talk forever. Thank you so much. I really can't thank you enough.
If you're back in Berlin, I'm buying you drinks.
Oh, you know I'm going to come back to Berlin.
Fantastic.
Thanks so much. I mean, it's brown when it's going down, so I can't wait to meet you in the flesh there, Taylor. Thank you so much.
You too, Mike. Okay, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, big love. People, it's been August 6, 2021. This is what people should keep your powder dry.